It's a little bit new for bulletin boards because it's traditionally been just about impossible to get an account. The businesses are generally pretty small volume, not the apple of any bank's eye because of that, and it's like a mail order or phone order business, which turns off all kinds of alarms and lights anytime you apply for an account like that. The basic things that you want to get out of a merchant account, it really boils down to increased sales. You're doing it on the premise that you're going to get orders that you simply would not have gotten another way, whether it's because it's more convenient for your customer or they want to use the deferred payment options, really doesn't matter to you. All you want to do is get enough of an increased volume to cover the costs of processing the credit cards. And that is something to consider. It may not be for everyone. It may sound a little funny coming from someone standing at a booth where we're trying to get everyone to sign up for credit card processing with us. But I'm not a salesperson with the company. I'm a programmer, so I have a slightly different approach, I guess. The expenses that you can expect with us or any processor are pretty typical. They're pretty standard, although the rates may vary. The first thing you're going to find with just about anyone is an application fee, usually of around $100, sometimes a little bit more. The most important part about this is it's usually not refundable. It's not a deposit. If your application is declined for any reason, you don't get the money back. So it's a very expensive way to check your credit report. I hear TRW do it for free now if you send them a request in the mail. If you don't know what's going to be on there, it's a good idea to check out ahead of time. And it's also a very good idea to know what you're getting into with any processor. Make sure you know, is the application fee refundable if you're declined? In a few cases, it will be. Teleflora's is not refundable. We actually tried. We began with a refundable application fee, and more than half of our applications were declined. Some people owing hundreds of thousands of dollars in delinquent accounts. That's one of the main reasons we made it non-refundable, sort of as an indication that you are serious. You not only are committed to your business and accepting credit cards, but that you think there's a pretty good chance we're going to want to do business with you. Similar to application fees for colleges. They charge everyone $40 or $50 so that you don't just send it in for the hell of it, you know, roll the dice and hope you come up with a Harvard diploma. Another big reason for the application fees, of course, is because the money's nice. There are some costs in processing any application. We have to pay to get credit reports or business ratings, depending on what kind of application it is, and our time just to take it in and enter it into our system. Also, most companies will use that to pay the salesperson that you're dealing with. They'll get some kind of commission based on the application fee. That's anything over $100, it's a real good bet that the salesperson is getting a good chunk of that. The next standard item is what's called a discount rate. It's a funny term for it because it is not a discount, it's what you pay. It's usually a percentage between 2% and 4%, depending on the type of card and the company that you're dealing with. You can generally get better rates with very high volume or a very high average ticket. If your average sale is $100 as opposed to $40, that's more appealing to any bank or processor. A lot of them, in addition to that percentage, for every transaction that you do, are going to charge a per transaction fee. Usually it's sort of all or none. Some of them will do nothing up to about 25 cents. I have heard of higher fees from a few banks of 50 cents or so. That's really a lot. We have a transaction fee that we really use to cover the cost of authorizing the transaction. Our customers dial in on an 800 number And we bill that for every process transaction, and it covers the cost to pay for that. And that's the typical usage of it. 25 cents for us. It depends a little bit on what type of card and how you want us to pay. Between 2.25% and 2.55% for Visa, MasterCard, and Discover, with some lower rates available if you have a very large volume, which we define as $75,000 a year in credit cards. The next thing, which is often a big problem with a lot of companies, a big expense at least, is a way to submit the transactions in. Most companies just don't deal with the paper slips anymore. It's more expensive for us to process that way. It's slower. It's more prone to error. Don't do it. It electronically is quicker for everyone, and you can generally get a better rate that way. But you need a way to submit those transactions into our computer. The traditional way is with a little Verifone credit card terminal that you see just about everywhere you go. It's one of the things I program. If you see a really neat credit card terminal, hopefully I'm the one who wrote the program for it. But those are often very expensive. That's another spot where the sales reps are generally making their salary. They're often commission only. The credit card terminals, you folks have an advantage. They're simple computers. They have a Zilog 80 CPU, an old 8-bit CPU from vintage about 1980. The high-end model, which Teleflora is proud to offer, has a whopping 32K RAM, which is battery-backed, a 300 baud modem, Bell 103. Ours even has Bell 212 for 1,200 blazing bits per second. But that mode normally isn't used. For authorizing transactions, modems on the other end are only 300 baud. So that's really not so much of a feature. Has a 16-character display, and punctuation characters look like hieroglyphics on it. And a 16-key keyboard, and a card reader. That's one thing that actually does have some value you won't find on your computers, probably. The manufacturer, Verifone, has pretty much cornered the industry. They do have a few competitors, but Verifone is very standard equipment. An advantage to getting it is if you ever need or want to switch processors, most should be able to and be happy to just reprogram it for you, and you're instantly set up to deal with a new company. The problem is that a lot of companies sell these units for thousands of dollars, $4,000, I have heard. Sales reps for many companies have a basement price that they can charge on a monthly lease of this equipment, and the rest is whatever they can get away with. We sell the terminals, and there's also a printer you can get with it, and they're normally priced roughly the same. Our purchase price is $475 for one of those terminals. Printer goes for the same. You may be able to get a slightly better deal than that, but it's not going to go a whole lot lower. A big difference, though, is we have just come out with, and this is something to inquire about anywhere you're shopping around, is an alternative to this, some PC software to take the place of it. The software is a whole lot cheaper. We've just finished up our software. We haven't actually released it yet. We're working on the manuals and packaging for it. We're selling it for $105, one-time purchase price. A disadvantage to it is that if you ever you get a better deal somewhere else or want to move on to another company, our software probably isn't going to do you a bit of good. Most of the message formats are different, and you can't simply reprogram our software to work with somebody else. But it works just like those credit card terminals, and there are several companies that have alternatives like this. There's in the booth right across from me out on the floor, there's a gentleman from a company, American Digital. Their product is the software that does this, and they hook up with banks and companies like ours and make their program compatible for different processors. So you may be able, through him, to find other options, places to shop around. Those are likely the only fees you're going to see everywhere. There are a few others that aren't so obvious normally, because some companies will offer basement low rates, sort of as a loss leader to get you in the door, and make up for it in other ways. Many have minimum monthly charges, which really hurts if you are doing very small volume. A typical minimum charge a month is $25, and if you're only doing $1,000 or $2,000 of volume a month, that if they say they're charging you 2% for the credit cards, that's not what you're paying if they round it off to $25 at the end of the month. There are also yes? No, it's a minimum of all their discount fees and transaction fees. If their statement, if your amount doesn't add up to this, they will at minimum bill you $25. That's actually fairly common. That's one thing Teleflora doesn't do. There isn't a minimum for us, but you will see it if you look around a bit. Instead of that, a lot of companies will simply tack on an extra monthly or per statement charge of $5 or so, in addition to whatever charges you get, just to sort of cover their overhead for maintaining your account. And then the fees get sort of cryptic. There's something that I'm going to tell you about called a chargeback. Happens when you get a fraudulent order. And if you're taking orders over the phone or through the mail or over the modem, you're going to get a fraudulent order. No matter what you do, it is going to happen, and it's going to suck when it happens, and you're going to be mad. But I'm telling you now, and you'll forget, you'll still be upset. But just plan for it in budgeting your business. Many chargebacks are expensive, yes. For a mail order company, under 1% of your total volume is a maximum. So that's a pretty conservative estimate, especially of dollar volume. Chargebacks tend to be on the more expensive orders. Those who are using someone else's credit card are happy to pay top dollar.
What's the point of the authorization code then if they can charge you back and you still have to get an authorization code?
Well, the authorization code helps a little bit. It does not give you a positive guarantee if the customer is not there. This is why the banks shut the doors when you say, I don't have a storefront, I'm mail order or phone order. The only way to get a guarantee on a credit card is to get that authorization and ask the customer to hand you the credit card, look at the customer's name, compare the signature on the back, get a signature on the sales receipt. Then it is. But over the modem, the problem is you don't know who's, or over the phone, you don't know that the person giving you an order has that credit card, is the credit card holder, or anything. Yes? If you want absolute protection from fraud like this, some way to get the to see the customer in person. If you've got local callers, you can ask them to come by, you know, or go to them yourself, and tell them to have the credit card ready. Get a look at that and get a signature on a receipt. That will help a lot. I'm not sure that it would be worth your time, really. Well, if you have a storefront, if your orders are coming in over the phone, it doesn't matter if you have a storefront or not. They can tell if the card is present at the point of sale. When it's swiped through the terminal, they know that, and they see the difference between keying it in. And also, when a chargeback comes through, they're going to ask you, this customer says he never made this order. Do you have a receipt or anything? Can you tell us about this order? If you have a signed receipt, you can send that back, and usually it's a case of the customer forgetting what happened. Did you have a question next? Okay, what'll happen is, well, I'll start with the problem, with someone ripping you off. That's what it is. It's simply a form of theft. Phone order and mail order merchants are easy prey because you never see the credit card. This person doesn't have to physically steal a wallet or take someone's mail to get the credit card. All they have to do is see a credit card number anywhere. And you can't use your credit card without letting people know the number. People who work in any business are going to see credit cards. Numbers simply get passed around like that. So someone will pick up a number like this of a card he knows to be valid and place an order with you for a subscription or whatever. You send it in for authorization and tell the credit card company, I want to authorize $30 on this credit card. Okay with you? And they say, yeah, there's plenty of credit left on this card. It's in good standing. It's approved. What's missing, you have the bank's authorization. What's missing is you don't have the cardholder's authorization. You have a voice over the phone. And that's not proof that the cardholder placed an order with you. And the credit card companies have to give the cardholder the benefit of the doubt in cases like this. And the burden, the risk is assumed by the mail order merchant, the one who decides to take business this way. The reason for that is, and there are three choices for who's going to take that loss. There's the cardholder, the bank, and you, the merchant. The cardholder really can't be responsible. They have no way of knowing if the waiter at the restaurant wrote down their credit card number and is going to town with it. If they were going to be responsible, that'd be the end of credit cards. I'd never use mine again. The banks, first of all, are in a position of power, and they don't want the responsibility. If it were forced upon them, the solution would be, okay, no more mail order. That's because they have no control over what you do at the point of sale. If an order sounds suspicious, they can't do anything about it. You're the only one who has contact with the customer, and even though you can't provide a complete solution, complete security, you can do more than the bank can. So that leaves you to take the risk on. Now, when this customer, whose credit card number was used, gets his statement and sees a charge that doesn't ring a bell, he's going to call his credit card company and tell them that. They're going to send him or ask him to send something in writing to back it up, to dispute the charge. A lot of them make it very easy for the cardholder. They send out a form letter. Citibank does this. Check a box and sign on the bottom and put it in this postage paid envelope, and you're done. They will immediately, or should at least, give the cardholder credit for the charge just on good faith and free up that amount on the cardholder's account. Then the cardholder's bank is going to contact Visa, that's the kind of card, tell them we have a chargeback for this merchant. Visa is going to look at the transaction and see, okay, that was cleared through Teleflora's bank. We need to send this on to Teleflora. And we'll get the notice of the chargeback. And depending on the nature of the transaction, we do different things. If it is a swiped transaction, we will try to contact the merchant and get a signature on the receipt. If it's not, we only have 5 days to get a response back to Visa on it. We don't bother. We make up a facsimile of the transaction that basically just reiterates the information. If this gets returned to the cardholder, if the transaction, if the cardholder still doesn't recall the transaction, the chargeback stands, and the credit card, the money gets transferred back to the cardholder's bank, taken out of the merchant bank, Teleflora's bank, if you're using us, and taken out of the merchant's account. You will get a notice from us or any processor explaining what has happened, hopefully with all the detail on the transaction, even the cardholder's letter of dispute attached. And then, if you see, oh, wait a minute, I know this guy, or I know this is the person who placed the order, if you're sure about it, or just want to pursue it further, you are on your own, for the most part. The bank's hands are really tied in what they can do on your behalf. The reason is that they have an interest in ruling in your favor. That's how they make money. They don't like chargebacks. They get a percentage of that transaction. They want the cardholder to be billed. and they're not a court. So they really, if there is a dispute over something, small claims court is your recourse for it. Yes? Many of them do for a chargeback. He's asking if there is an additional fee when a chargeback is processed. Many do charge $10 or $15 for this. They're really not making a profit on it. There are fees involved for having a chargeback. That's one of the reasons why, even if you're a solid merchant doing mail order or phone order business, like I said, you are going to get chargebacks. The bank issuer, whether you're able to cover that or not, has to go through some hassle and has to pay a per chargeback fee to the credit card association. I believe it's $7 or $8 right now. But in addition to that, there is postage for mailing out and processing each letter to the merchant. And then, almost always, there's the phone call afterwards, because it's upsetting when you get one of these. And you feel like you've done everything right. You got the card authorized. You gave the person who ordered exactly what they asked for. You have been cheated. And unfortunately, there's not a whole lot the Teleflora or the bank or credit card company can do. Yes? No, that should be a red flag for you. If he asked what shows up on the cardholder's statement, any merchant account you get, you should definitely have your business name showing up on the cardholder's statement. The way we work, and a lot of companies like ours, is exactly the way companies doing it illegally do. The difference is that the banks know exactly what we're doing, and we have special arrangements with them to do things like put each merchant's name on each transaction. Using another business's merchant account is called factoring, which is the worst four-letter word in the credit card industry. They don't like it because it normally is only done by businesses who could not get a merchant account otherwise. There's generally a reason why businesses cannot get a merchant account. Justified or not, it usually boils down to the credit card issuer not wanting them because of the type of business, because of the risk involved with it, because of a bad credit history with the business. They consider it a risk. So when they find out factoring has been going on, generally both merchants' accounts are canceled immediately. They will hold on to all the money they can get their fingers on in reserve against future chargebacks, which are even more likely if your customers are seeing some other business name on their statement. Even if you try to make that clear at the time of sale, they might not get their statement for a month or more, might not look at it to pay the bill for a few weeks after that, and a lot of them just aren't going to remember. Yes? The way we work is we bill the merchant. That's a little bit different than most companies. Most, when you sign up, will have you sign a form that gives them a blank check on your checking account. Normally, this really isn't a problem. I mean, it sounds a little risky, but Genie and CompuServe will do the same thing on your account. What it means is they can immediately debit your account any charges that come in. If you're buying equipment from them or get a chargeback or issue a refund to a customer, they'll take it out of your account. It makes collections a lot easier for them, but it is a bit of a responsibility because things do go wrong. So that's how we go. Yes? Excuse me? We bill the merchant. And what will happen is if you have credit card transactions that we owe you money for, we will take it out of those funds before we pay you. But if there is no credit card activity, we'll send you a bill for it. Yes?
In terms of this whole category of chargebacks, is it possible that, like, 3 months down the road, you, the cardholder says, hey, you need to give me what I expected, I want my money back? Is that a black market where it is?
A chargeback is bad. If you ever go over that 1% of your dollar volume in chargebacks, You are going to have the full and complete attention of whoever you're processing with. Visa has recently put some pretty strict rules in place about this. Any merchant going over that volume is welcome to some very hefty 5-digit fines, and if it continues for 3 months, they no longer have a Visa merchant account. So if you even approach that mark, it's time to look at what's going wrong and try to fix it. But no matter what the reason for the chargeback, they're all treated the same. Even if it's just something went wrong and the customer was charged twice, if they resolve that through their issuing bank and not you, it's going to turn into a chargeback. That's why a lot of companies, mail order companies especially, have very liberal return policies, and they promote that very much. You know, Land's End, if you ever have any problem with any of their products, send it back, you'll get a refund back, no questions asked, because they don't want a chargeback. It's better for them to give you your money back than risk getting up to that 1%. The difference between credits and chargebacks, there is a little bit of one. Excessive refunds issued by you will still be viewed as a problem if it goes over that 1%. It is not as bad as a chargeback. At least there's no paperwork involved for the issuers, first of all, and you are resolving the problems. One reason the card companies don't like that is because chargebacks really do make them look bad. I've seen dispute letters from cardholders bitching at the credit card issuer saying, you screwed up my account again. You know, these charges are not mine. I'm sick of you people. And it's not that bank that did anything wrong. They just accepted the information from some merchant. So a lot of it is for their image. They don't want anything being sold that the customers are not satisfied with. And at least if you've issued the refund, well, the customer wasn't happy, but they don't feel like you or anyone else tried to cheat them, really. Yes? That is a problem. We've seen that a few times. It normally is resolvable if you contact your credit card merchant bank or company like Teleflora as soon as possible. There are some pretty strict time limits involved. But if that does happen, and it does once in a while, sometimes just because the customer doesn't understand, they're doing it twice, we can tell the bank, you know, show them, look, a credit was issued for this exact amount back a month ago. And they'll reverse the charge back for you. But it is a little inconvenient at the very least. Yes? Chargebacks? Most merchants do it every day when they're processing electronically. And that's as quickly as possible is another way to help reduce your chargebacks. If you wait a week or more, you may miss a cutoff on your customer's statement. They're not going to see that bill for a couple of months, and they may forget what the charge is for. It really should not be longer than a week if you're processing electronically. The reason electronic is quicker is cheaper is because it is quicker, and there are less problems like that. People submitting paper drafts, it takes longer, and there are more problems like that, and that's one of the many reasons that's more expensive. Yes? What typical charges for you will get the full amount of the sale taken back. Companies that do tack on a fee, it's usually $10 or $15 is what I've heard. Some don't at all. Teleflora doesn't. In fact, we even give you back your discount fee that you originally paid us on the transaction. Something about the verifying, those were some good points about doing basic things to verify orders, particularly when you start out or on large orders. That does help a lot. There's a new service being offered by Visa and MasterCard called address verification. I'm sure you can all guess what it means. That you can submit, along with a request for authorization, cardholder zip code up to 9 digits and their street address. And in addition to getting, hopefully, an authorization number back, they will tell you 5 digits of the zip code match our billing address for the customer, or and street address does not match, or they both match, or neither match. And it's really up to you what you want to do at that point. I've been doing some work recently reprogramming our terminals to handle the new formats for this. Personally, I'm a little worried that it's a sugar pill, because it may for a short while, for the short term, help a bit, because most people using a fraudulent card just have the card number. But a lot of fraudulent use comes from lost and stolen credit cards in wallets and from stolen mail. Well, guess what information besides the credit card number is right there along with it. So a couple times you'll foil somebody and they're going to learn that they need to hold on to the address and zip code too. And even if you do have a match on that, for that reason, because someone could get that information very easily too, there's no extra guarantee. It's just a little help for you. Yes?
In direct mail, if you receive a check, you're allowed by the post office 30 days to make delivery. You deposit the check, uh-huh. You have to ship within 30 days. Is there any requirement within that you have to not clear until you ship, or can you clear it and then ship within a period of time?
You're not to clear until you ship.
Period.
The reason, because the customers, that's really a policy the credit card companies have in place to make their customers happy. They don't want the customers getting billed and a product a month later, worried that the customer will think that their order's not coming or something like that. And because credit card statements and such get processed so quickly, they want it as close as possible to the actual date of shipment. No one's going to come banging on your door if it's a few days ahead of time. If you do it the day before, you take an order one night and ship it out, the following Monday or something like that. But if you're waiting 30 days or so, or even a couple of weeks, they're probably going to ask you to change that.
How would that apply to
I guess activation of the subscription level, or what if that's what you're offering to a bulletin board, which generally isn't a problem, for that. Oh, no. If someone wants to sign up early for it, you would have in place that their access is going to continue an extra 6 months. So, they would technically have the product and just not be able to use it until the time came around for it. Yes? It's not okay. The address verification is not widely available. It's not available in the current version of our PC software. The processor that we deal with that handles our transactions is just putting this in place. I had a voicemail message yesterday that they think they're done and they're ready for me to test all the functions of it. We're ready to go ahead, assuming they haven't broken anything there in their credit card terminals. There's no extra cost for it, and there shouldn't be with any company that has it, but not a whole lot of them are going to have it already. It is pretty new, and it works. It requires reprogramming, doing things over to get it. To do a chargeback? That varies a little bit by state. Federal law gives them at least 60 days to dispute a charge once they get a statement. California extends that forever, indefinitely, forever, anytime, any year. The cardholder doesn't have federal protection, which is a lot. They're only dealing with California's laws, but different states have extended that period. The turnaround time from point of sale to you getting a chargeback on an order with a problem is often quite long, usually around 6 months or so. The cardholder may not contact their bank for a couple of months, and the bank may not get it out the door for another month or two after that. So you really have to keep records. You should keep records back at least a year, because they can go back up to a year even. Yes?
What currently now verified by Kodak.
There are some agreements to. He's asking about making arrangements to have an automated system that's doing things like verifying signatures instead of having to manually go back and do it in for each transaction. There are contracts that simple contracts that the credit card companies will honor. You should check it out with them ahead of time. That put a cardholder's signature on file. You get their signature once. And hopefully an imprint of the card along with it. And that authorizes you fairly specifically to make charges at a regular interval. A lot of membership type, you know, health clubs will do something like this. The hotel has basically done this when I checked in. They have my signature and they've authorized who knows what based on my stay, but if I skip town, they don't have my signature for the actual amount they need to bill me, but they have on file my authorization to bill them up, bill me up to that amount, so they have that to fall back on. So there are ways to make arrangements with that. You should check with your processor to find out what type of agreement would be binding for that. Well, well, how far you want to go in preventing fraud like this is really up to you. You know, once you see how much work it takes for you and what kind of risk you're going through. Even with all of this, there's still the possibility of getting a charge back for something. To get that first signature to really make it stick, they would want to have an imprint or the electronic equivalent of that credit card, so that you were able to compare the signature on the card and see that it matches the name imprinted on the card, even just that one time. And that may not be at all practical for you, and you know, it may be smarter, it may be cheaper for you to just bite the bullet and take the risk and hang on for the occasional chargeback that comes through. Good question. There is, although for bulletin boards, the good things, the reason Teleflora is interested is that, he's asking what to say to a bank or a company like ours to get them to like you. What are the good words to use? What are the words to avoid that are going to turn them off? The good thing is that you are a subscription service on a bulletin board. You're not taking inventory off your shelf and sending a product out the door. You're selling a service that takes a long amount of time to be complete, you know, 6 months or a year of access. That's not very prone to fraud. You know, someone who steals a wallet is going to call the shopping club and order a TV that he can resell. He's not going to call you up so he can download some files and you shut off his account as soon as the chargeback comes through. It'll still happen, but it's just not as appealing to them. And even when it does, the benefit is that there's little risk of it putting you out of business. People selling hardware, especially computer hardware, are often selling on very tight margins. They get a big chargeback in, and that might be it. If they get hit with a few of them, they close up, and then there's the bank with no one to pass these chargebacks on to. They've got to eat that. That's one of their concerns, that you're going to go out of business and leave them holding the bag on all your transactions. So what you want to let them know is that you didn't just set this up in your basement last weekend. And you're not going to get bored with it and close it up and move on to something else. Actually, they can. They can try to charge something back even after they've used the services. Credit card users have more consumer protection than anyone else. Any dispute they have with your product or your service, the bank is going to try to resolve, try to find out what went wrong, what they didn't like about it. If they say they didn't get what, you know, if you were promising some new service to come on a few months down the road and it didn't happen, you know, you were going to add a CD-ROM to the bulletin board and that never came through, they may have a legitimate complaint if they say that's the reason they paid you in the first place. In any dispute like this, the cardholder is going to have the advantage because of what I mentioned earlier about the bank. The banks really have to give the cardholder the benefit of the doubt in any dispute. And if they say there are problems with what you gave them, there is a chance that it's going to be charged back, even if you say, no, here's what I showed the customer, here's our policy, and here's what we've done to correct his complaints or whatever. That's another good reason to have promote a very open return policy, basically, or customer satisfaction. Make sure the customer tries to contact you if there's ever a legitimate gripe like that, because in most cases you can resolve it, and even if you can't, it may be in your best interest to just give the money back anyway. Someone who set out to rip you off, and is just using your services and really has no complaint, just wants the money back, there's really not a whole lot you can do about it. The authorization you got at the time of sale, the customer wasn't there. It's a little difficult to prove what policies or guidelines they saw at the time they signed up. Not to the credit card holder. They do have a limit, like I said, federal law, after 60 days where the charge stands. Even if it was a fraudulent charge, if they didn't contact anyone in time, then that most of them extended up to a year if they extended at all. Yes? ANI? No, I haven't. What's ANI verification? Oh, to see what number the caller's coming from? Okay. No, I haven't heard of any credit card processors using that to verify who's calling you. But, I mean, you would know where your call is coming from. That still doesn't mean anything to the credit card company. What that'll be useful for is at the very least, if a chargeback comes through, you know how to contact this person, and you can call them all sorts of names or threaten to take them to court, something like that. But the credit card company is going to say, well, so someone called you from that number. We can't bill that person for it. We don't know him from Adam. They're normally not. They're not going to give you the credit.
Yeah.
Even if you really do have their phone number and address, even if it really was the cardholder, it would help you. But nothing. The only thing that is going to eliminate risk and chargebacks is getting the customer in person. Yes?
You mentioned that the current version of your software doesn't support the address verification.
It really depends on what the reaction to it is here. You know, we'll see how many people are interested in it. If there are a substantial number of customers with it, we're certainly going to be working on adding enhancements, and that's one of them. We would probably, adding features like that, have some kind of a small upgrade fee of $10 to $20, to cover costs of sending out new documentation and the work on it.
going after the bulletin board business,
uh-huh.
are you going to develop door programs or whatever?
For bulletin boards, we have a companion program with our software that should be useful to a lot of bulletin board operators. It can work with something like a registration or subscription door. If you have that door set up to write out a simple ASCII comma delimited file with the transaction information and then call up our program, it'll read that file in and try to dial out and get an authorization for it and write back the response to another file, and your registration program can read that in and do whatever you like with it, upgrade access if it's approved or send a message if not. But our program is not specific to any bulletin board software, and it would really be on a door developer or SysOp to set things up to work with that. Yes, you, sir. Uh-huh. Okay, Teleflora offers a couple of payment options. Most companies only offer one, electronic payment to a bank account. Our turnaround time for that is 3 banking days. The money doesn't move through on Saturday and Sunday, so transactions on Monday should be in your bank account on Thursday. Our other payment option is where we send a check in the mail to you every 2 weeks. Takes a little bit longer, but the rates are a little bit lower for it. And that's a very standard policy with any processor. If you can wait longer for the money, you can probably get lower rates from them simply because they make money holding on to it while you wait. In the back. For new startup companies, it is tougher than an existing one. What we would use, and I would imagine anyone looking to approve you, we'd look at your personal credit or that of the officers of the corporation if there is no business history to look at. If there are problems with that, late payments or you know things like that, it's probably best to contact the company directly ahead of time because those application fees are non-refundable. And most of the time you're going to be dealing with a sales rep who doesn't particularly care if you are approved or not. He wants an application fee because he gets a commission from that. The processors themselves don't want to waste our time taking an application that's going to be declined either. Even with $100, it's not worth our time. I think most of them will be happy if you can tell them there may be a problem. You know, a few years ago, this was the situation. Should I still apply with you? I think they'll be happy to talk about that ahead of time. And the same is true with the nature of the business. I've heard some merchants who are urged by sales reps to stretch the truth a little bit. You know, say they were rented a space in a flea market, not that they're mail order or phone order. And while something like that is pretty likely to get you approved up front, the issuer is going to find out what you're doing real quick, cut you off overnight, and hold on to every penny of yours that they can get. Submit your name. That Visa and MasterCard maintain a list of merchants who have been terminated for reasons like that. There's no prohibition against signing up a merchant who's on that list, but the previous processor is listed and the reason for termination. If the reason is fraudulent application, you're not going to get another merchant account with that business. So trying to bend the rules is a really bad idea for this. It may be harder being perfectly upfront, but you won't end up getting reamed like that.
If you're a new startup, it's a corporation, a brand new corporation, but one of the officers was extremely financially sound, AAA rating, if approved, does the officer have to personally guarantee, or based on the officer's strength, do you talk about the corporation as in a corporate account, or does it have to be personally guaranteed?
With corporate accounts like that, it really does depend on the specific situation. Obviously, we would prefer personal guarantee from the officer who's got, you know, stellar credit. If he's not willing to do that, he would need to talk to us, talk to the credit manager with us or whatever company. They may be willing. you know, just to get the business in to strike some other kind of deal, they're going to want, they will try to get a personal guarantee first, you know, simply to have something to fall back on if the corporation disappears. But it's worth a try to avoid that. Yes? Yeah, we've got a bunch signed up. I think the first one was last October. A local sysop of a board I use, he got a new registration door that had stuff about credit cards, and we started chatting, and he was our first customer. And that's really the reason we're interested in it, because I'm a user of bulletin boards, so I understand what they are and how they work. Yeah, I was able to explain to my boss something that... to watch out for that we did encounter. One of the vice presidents where I work and the president of the data processing company we use, I said, bulletin board sysops, they said hackers, right from one to the other. And these are not foolish people or naive people. The president of the data processing company is a brilliant guy. He, even after that comment, still has my respect. But their business thrives on computers, and all they see in the press is, you know, the new Michelangelo virus is going to destroy the world. So it's important to try to, you know, getting back to the question about what's a good thing to express to a potential company and what's bad, want to avoid that image at all costs. Present yourself as a business. Send a letter in with your application on letterhead, introducing yourself, explaining what the focus of the bulletin board, you know, the group you cater to, some of the history of it, that really goes over well. That also helps show that you have a commitment to the business, not that, if you just sign in the application forms, they have no way of knowing these things. If you are very serious about it, if you have a 64-line system and you're not leaving it, you'll be cold and dead before you walk away from that.
Show them you're investing somewhere else, like letterhead, like the card.
Like, sure, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, there is no such thing as not having a refund policy when you accept credit cards. You do have a refund policy, and you cannot supersede the federal laws that protect credit card users or the credit card company's protections of credit card holders. If you have an exchange-only policy, that still may not wash with the credit card company. If they've signed a contract waiving all those rights, you may be able to. Specific exceptions like that, you should really review with whatever company you're dealing with. Try to get it onto their merchant bank, see what they have to say. If they have other customers like that, they may have be able to provide you with a form contract to sign to that effect. But by default, you can't just override any of those rules.
Uh-huh. And they include credit cards and everything else.
We don't have any customers doing anything like that, so I really couldn't tell you if that would be binding or not. I would just recommend to check it ahead of time so you know what you're getting into and you're not wasting your time and counting on something that's not going to help you if they're really not going to honor it. Uh-huh.
So having all that paperwork in place.
doesn't mean anything if the guy says he has to do that and say, hey, you go hire a lawyer.
For mail order and phone, for bulletin boards, we don't have a whole lot of history. I think we have about 30 signed up, and some of them are pretty new. But I actually, just before hitting the plane, ran another report for my boss. It was 0.4% of total volume. There were a few chargebacks in there.
Yes? Total dollar volume?
Total dollar volume. All of the percentages, all they care about is the dollar volume, not transaction count. Yes, sir. You really should. If they're any good at all, they're going to notice a big change, and you are stepping into more risk yourself too. You're selling hard goods that people do have an incentive to try to rip you off with. They get the product and you can't get it back from them. If they see your average transaction go from $20 to $300, they're probably going to give you a phone call, and it'll simply look better for you to check it out ahead of time. If they're paranoid, if they're having problems, they may shut off your account and then give you a phone call to see what's going on. Excuse me? It depends on the situation. We have, on accounts that are clearly doing something very wrong, we have shut them off before making the phone call. Yeah, we really haven't had many that have changed like that, but we have had some that have told us that they have plans like that down the road, and all we say is let us know so the alarms don't go off when you do make the change. If the average sale amount isn't going to change much, you probably don't need to let them know, something like that. If it's keeping in line with the volume of business that you're doing and the size of the sales, it's not going to make a whole lot of difference to the processor. But going from bulletin board subscriptions to computer hardware is usually a pretty big jump.
The average amount is, say, $18 to
$20. It's lower than ideal. I mean, we would certainly like an average of $30 or $40. That's because there's sort of a fixed overhead for us for every transaction. So the higher it is, the more appealing you will be to a processor, but $18 or $20 should be fine. Much lower than that, and it is going to, people aren't going to be too interested in going to the trouble for that. Yes, ma'am? No, at the time a chargeback comes in, she's asking about what we do when a chargeback comes in and we generate a facsimile to get back in time for the five-day limit. When the chargeback comes in, we look back at the records of the transaction and generate a facsimile from that. Yeah. Well, when the transaction is keyed, the original receipt is pretty meaningless anyway. If it's swiped, we do what we can to contact the merchant, and we can't always. Sometimes we can't contact them, sometimes they can't find the record in time, and in that case, they're going to get the chargeback for it. Because it really is, especially with the amount of time the rest of the process takes, it's an extremely short requirement. Some of the other card companies are better than Visa and MasterCard about this. Discover and American Express will first send an inquiry letter asking for information about the charge and usually giving 30 days to get a response back explaining what happened, if the customer is unhappy, or proof of the sale if the customer doesn't know about the charge. Right, we print a standardized form to make a facsimile up for it. Teleflora clears MasterCard and Visa and Discover and Diners Club and Carte Blanche and one called JCB that you probably never heard of, and you quite frankly won't see a whole lot of it, at least for a couple of years. American Express is the obvious big exception there. For any company, if you want to get American Express processing, you'll need to call American Express directly and get a merchant account with them. Most processors will be able to set something up with American Express so that we can process the information on the transaction and send it on to American Express, but the rates and the money are strictly between you and Amex in that case. Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah? Oh, well, good. What you did, though, I would like to point out as a very bad idea, because you should never give a cash, effectively, refund on a credit card sale, because if this guy was slimy, he could still contact his credit card company and say, I was told I'd get a refund for this, and I never got one. Well, I understand that you knew the person and it was okay, but in general, Good. Even for the in that case, if you had issued a refund through Teleflora and hopefully through anyone else, you would get the discount rate that you paid back on the transaction. So maybe worth it to do it for that reason too. Yeah, probably could have saved a few pennies, huh? Yes. No, issue a refund to the credit card account. If you're refunding to a customer who billed on a credit card, don't give them cash or a check. It's against the credit card company policies for you to do that because it can put you in double jeopardy where it can't be resolved. You know, in the case where you issue a credit card refund and it's disputed with the bank, although that's a bit of a mess, it usually can be straightened out and you end up getting all your money right. Right. No, it's not there. It's still not good, but it is definitely better than a chargeback. If you have a very high percentage of refunds, they're going to want to talk to you about what the problem is and what we can do to fix it, because they don't want, you know, they don't make money that way, for one thing. The money's going right back where it came from.
So refunds do the same target
as... Right, right. Yes, sir. Good and the bad, sure. Okay. I think I started with make sure they know that you are a subscription service and there's no inventory. The most important thing really is to tell them as truthfully as you can exactly what the business is, exactly what kind of transactions they're going to see. Stretching the truth can get you in the door, but lock you out permanently, possibly down the line, when they find out, and they will. If you're selling something that you said you wouldn't be, or something other than what you said, they may eventually get a letter from a cardholder disputing a charge and explaining what was purchased then. Is that me feeding back?
Are you taking out?
I can, but I also have all the forms and postage paid envelopes if you want to just stick it in the mail to us.